Welcome back to another great episode of Comedians in Bed. And as always, I got another great one here for you. You know, I got to give an introduction, man. You know, sometimes I'll be watching like old clips of comedy shows or, you know, comedy specials. And, you know, I always watch Def Comedy Jam. And I always keep notice of when they have somebody on there that's always frequent, you know. And when I seen this guy, he grabbed my attention, man. You guys know who he is. He's very funny. He's very talented. You've seen him everywhere. Please give it up for Billy D. Washington on the show today, everybody.
Yo.
What's going on, man? How you feeling today?
Look, bro, why is this called Comedians in Bed? This is uncomfortable. This is uncomfortable. What's going on? You didn't tell me about all that.
You know, you just, I feel like the bedroom is like where you just talk about any and everything. You know, you just let it all out. So kind of play on words. Yeah.
I got you. You know, the bedroom. I understood that, but Comedians in Bed. But come on, with Ty. And I saw your picture. I'm like, bro, what's happening? Okay. What's up, bro? It's all good, though. What's up, man? What's good?
Chilling, man. Chilling. So where do you do comedy at now?
All over the place, man. I do most of my work now on cruise ships, dude. I work on for most of the time for Carnival Cruise Line. I've been with them off and on since like 2001. Mm-hmm. But, you know, around 2012, they just asked to buy my whole schedule out. Yeah. And I don't take all the stuff that they want to give me because I like to do other stuff, too. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the foundation right now.
Okay, like you're like the second comic I've heard that does that. How is that? How is it different from, you know, like doing a theater or a club, and how do you get into that?
The only difference is it's on water, and you know, you don't have to. I ain't gotta be promoting and putting out flyers or getting people to calling people to come and selling tickets and all that sort of stuff. If you're good, they pay you a great wage to perform in front of people, you know, that's already there. And on Carnival, it's basically everybody that you see in comedy clubs anywhere across the country. They got the best comedy club audiences, I'm telling you, man. I mean, I do, you know, A Room, like the Funny Bones and the Improvs and the Looney Bins, and I do theaters and whatever. But these audiences be just as live, if not better, because, you know, we have to do five different shows on some ships. And some people, and they got to be different material every time. And man, and it's one thing to, you know, do an hour in front of a club, you know, the theater and whatever. But it's a whole nother thing when people just keep coming back to see your 30 minute different shows all the time. So then by the end of the cruise, man, you know them. They know you. Mm-hmm. And not only do you make like nice, you know, social media, or you can kind of get your socials up a little bit more there, but you'd be making like real relationships because you see people during the day and you see them at night. And whereas in comedy clubs, which I still love comedy clubs, but like sometimes it's an empty feeling when you go up and you do that best hour and everybody gone and you might not ever see them again. Mm.
I never thought of it from that perspective. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
How do they do, like, do they, how personal do you guys get? Like, you know, you see them every day. Like, are you hanging out with them, going, like, drinking or anything like that? Or are you just having a personal conversation, like, sharing, like, this is my kid, this is your kid type deal?
It's, it just depends on who you are, like, and what you want to talk about. I talk a lot about mental health. Mm-hmm. And I talk a lot about politics and what I do. So when people want to have a conversation with me about stuff that I talk about on stage, then that's cool. I don't really be out drinking with them because they ain't never trouble. But a lot of comedians do. A lot of comedians do. They go out to the clubs with them. They hang out, you know, at the bars and all that sort of stuff. It is not my vibe. Nothing wrong with it. It's not what I do. But if somebody wants to have some kind of, you know, substantive conversation about anything, you know, about life. Sometimes people be out here on these vacations, man. You know, and somebody's missing because, you know, they didn't make it. You know, they were supposed to be there, but, you know, passed away, you know, whatever, you know. So sometimes they want to talk about that. But no, dude, it's it took some getting used to just because of all the negativity surrounding the job. Mm-hmm. Basically, you know, I don't even accept negativity about working on cruise ships from anybody unless it's somebody who's actually worked on cruise ships, succeeded, and then quit. Mm-hmm. And you can talk all the shit you want to then. Mm-hmm. But if you ain't never done it before and you're just assuming that it's some way and you have no idea what it is, then that's dumb.
Yeah. 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 On these cruise ships, how did you get it? Like, how do you get like booked for that? Is there like a certain booker, or did it just like word of mouth type deal?
Kind of word of mouth. I mean, I kind of got, like I said, I started with them a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then I quit because I got, do you know what NACA is?
No, I don't know what that is.
NACA is the National Association of Campus Activities.
Okay.
And so as a comedian, like if you want to get into colleges, you have to do NACA. So young blood, write that down. Yeah. I'm gonna drop some stuff on you. I'm gonna tell you how to succeed, make that money. It's called NACA, NACA. And so they have a lot of college agents and whatever. And it'd be smart to, you know, if you want to expand your financial horizons, then that's great. Mm-hmm. And so I hit two NACAs. Like I had a big one in 2001. I got about 70 schools, which paid, you know, almost $250,000. Mm-hmm. And then I hit another one in 2008 when I came back to Carnival. There was like another 40 schools, which was, you know, you do that math. But then, when that ran out, I started like doing clubs. And in 2012, they called me and asked me if I wanted to come back. But I didn't want to come back for the same money that they offered me before, or that I was bringing before. So I had a figure in my head that I was going to tell them. And then they offered me three times what that was. Okay. So, no, dude, I've been happy, man. I've been blessed, you know, to go from colleges to clubs. Like, I was in clubs when money was good. I did colleges when the money was good. And now, you know, these cruise ships, you know, they coming up. So
yeah, is that the venue that has the most money, or one of the top ones that have the most money?
Well, I mean, if you are an unknown person with a lot of material and you funny, you good, this, mm-hmm. that's the spot. Because when people think about Comedy Tide, like the basic person, they look at us in two categories. You know, either you're really famous or you are a failure as a comedian. But there was a whole middle market of stand-up comedy that nobody ever considers. Well, it's like regular people never consider, whereas you can make a living, where you can make between, you know, $80,000 and, you know, $700,000 a year just being a great, you know, mainstream comedian that people know and it has a solid reputation. You know, I used to work a lot of black corporate stuff because I was one of the cleaner dudes on Def Jam.
Mm-hmm.
So when the black corporate buyers, they were looking for somebody, they talked to each other. So this is for real, man. We're like when back in the day when Bill Cosby, I mean, not like back then, Bill Cosby was still old then, but like when Bill Cosby and Sinbad weren't available, you know, back in the day, you know, they called me mm-hmm. up my dude, James Stevens III. Or if they don't have, you know, $30,000 to play George Wallace, you know, they're like, well, will Billy D. Washington come in for $75,000? Hell yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, the whole middle, and cruise ships fit right in there.
Yeah.
It's right in the middle. It's the middle market of stand-up comedy. We're not open micers out, you know, at the night grinding these jokes and with a day job, but we're not celebrities either, making millions of dollars a year and, you know, in Christian theaters and selling out and whatever. But we are locked tight in this area. And if you know how to manage your money and, you know, you can stay away from the vices, hey man, you can live a great life as a stand-up comedian and have nobody to know your name. I've done it for the last 35 years. And it's been a great life.
Are you content with where you're at now, or would you like to know people to know your name? And the reason why I ask that is because I feel like as young comics, sometimes we'd be like, oh, we want to be like the Kevin Harts to Steve Harvey. But just doing what you're doing right now, not trying to slight you, but it's great living and you get to do what you want to do, you know?
It's no slight whatsoever, bro. But it's not, I had to come to the realization that it wasn't even up to me. Like when you realize that, okay, fame and fortune and, you know, and whatever, it's not up to us. Yeah. All we can do is prepare ourselves for that shot. But for some of us, that shot never come. You mm-hmm. you never get that one thing that you get. It's like somebody like Kevin Hart, they had to have a series of great things to happen for that guy to be as big as he is. A lot of people like that, man. But he's but when he was when his number was called, he was ready every time. But like I could tell you stories about showcases that I had, opportunities that I had, or stuff, places, you know, times that I zigged when I should have zagged. Well, my career could have been completely different. But I don't know if that would have stopped me from writing, because writing is the annuity. Now, you know what annuity is, right? It's like, you know, it's an investment platform that you know, it just gets more and more valuable over time, just as long as you keep putting stuff in it. With a lot of comedian friends of mine that kind of blew up back in the 90s, and, you know, and they were doing a little TV show. Well, not a little TV show. They were doing their TV show. They were doing their thing, man. But they stopped writing. So what happened is, when all that ran out, they didn't have nothing to fall back on.
Yeah.
But since I never got that shot, I've always had to keep writing. So when these money things come up, like, you can't miss me on nothing. You want me to do, if you want me to do a corporate gig for the white people, I got you. You want me to do the Boule or the Urban League for the black people? I got you. You want me to do a cruise ship? I got that. You want me to do a theater? I got you. You want me to open for somebody? We good. If you want me to do a comedy club, headline my weeks, I do all that too. So that's the blessing. But as long as you just like, you got to be in love with the game, man. I'm not talking about the celebrity game, but the comedy game, because writing is the most important thing.
I was speaking to an OG out here. I interviewed him, and he was telling me a tip about how, you know, you just write whatever comes to your mind every day. And I've been doing that ever since. And I can say that the stuff that just comes up with, I just is kind of easier and flawless. And I can just see how it's becoming easier. So how important is writing? Because I think so many people just get caught up when I'm booked. But it's like, okay, are you writing though? So like, how important is writing?
Who was the OG to tell you that?
His name is Brian Million from Cincinnati.
Okay, I don't know what it is, but that he gave you very sound advice. Dude, with my notes on my phone, there's a lot of stuff I can't even decipher. Stuff that I've written down when I was drunk. Stuff that I've just written down by happenstance. But man, if you go through those notes just from years and years and years, or even 3 or 4 years, whatever you wrote down, it might not be funny. It might not work to you in January of, you know, 2022, but in October of 2023, you might come up with something and be like, damn, I could put that with that. And that's how it all, your comedy body of work, just in terms of you as an artist, like it's always evolving, but you never know where the inspiration is going to come from. And then sometimes, you know, the whole joke don't come to you at the same time, but eventually if you establish a template, then, you know, you're good. It's like right now. You know much about politics?
Yeah.
I do the, you know, I've been trying to find a political bit, politicians, you know, some playing checkers, some playing chess. And I could never come up with the third game that was funny, because I know it'd be a funny concept within something else that I do. But now I got it. It's like some play checkers, some play catch. I mean, somebody checkers, some play chess. But Mitch McConnell is playing freeze tag.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Because like every time he talks, he freeze now. And so if I had not written that down back in the day, then I wouldn't even remember. This would be just something. But writing it down, man, that's the best advice. Do everything. And I'm just talking about like jokes, just like schedule and advice and philosophy. If you hear a cool movie line, you're like, man, that was cool as fuck. Write it down. Because you never know. I ain't going to say you're going to use it. But it might inspire you to be able to write something else. I write everything down every day.
Yeah. Okay. Do you set like a certain amount of time that you're writing a day? You're writing, or you just like whatever comes to my head, I'm just freeing.
It's perpetual, you know. Sometimes you can do it. Like if you feel like write one day, if you feel like sometimes I'll challenge myself. I go, man, I'm gonna write something funny today. I'm gonna do something today. Like on cruise ships, that's another beauty of it. It's like you could be in your room during the day. And whatever you do, you just walk to the stage and do it in front of a packed room that night all by yourself. So sometimes I'll just challenge myself to write something just based on something everybody know about. So then I'll go through like TikTok hashtag and see what's popular, and then try and come up with something, you know, that's my point of view from whatever's going on. Okay. I mean, you know, we went bananas with the whole Aquaman and the remember, with the folding chair and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's over now. But man, for a couple of weeks, but them jokes was hitting.
Yeah, yeah. So are you writing those jokes quick and just memorizing it, or are you just going up there and freestyling it?
Sometimes I freestyle. Sometimes I write them. I write them and then I memorize them. And I go up and do them. I memorize them generally, mm-hmm. but specifically, no, because I don't. That's not my process. Like yeah. I'll know. I'll write it down and know what I'm going to say, and I'll record it. And like I'll keep trying it a bunch of different ways. And then once I get the way that I want to do it, that's when I'll put it in the lineup.
Okay.
Consistently.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because sometimes I'll be. Like you try to catch that, I'll be trying to catch the wave of like new events, but it'd be like, I just be two in my head. I'd be like, okay, I got to write this down. And it's like, if I just go up there and talk, you could just do it like that. Yeah.
Right. But don't sell your writing short mm-hmm. because the more you do it, the better you get at it. Cause like the more you write, the more you start to develop these mental templates that are just surround, like stuff will just, what game am I thinking about? Oh man, there's a game that I can't think of it, but like stuff will just fall into place when you expose yourself to a whole lot of different templates. Like if you have some stuff that you write and you write it down and the beat is like, dum, ba dum, ba dum, and then bow, then that's the beat. So uh-huh. sometimes you'll just see stuff and they'll just fall right into that template. You'd be like, okay, it's the same rhythm or this other thing that I do. But there's no way you can really accomplish that if, like, you just going, like, people to go, well, I'll never write nothing down. Well, hey, man, you might be just that brilliant, but it's not the way, most yeah. processes work, especially people who want to work and who need to accumulate, who want to accumulate a lot of material so that, because, like, with me, I got a family. Dude, I can't right. be going through comedy clubs, year after year doing the same 45 minutes. It ain't going, I got to keep.
Yeah.
Churning them jokes, writing them sets, working on different skill sets, hand speed, whatever, references, making sure I'm not dating myself, kicking mm-hmm. something out, putting something back in. And so and that's what you guys have the advantage because you set the pace for us. You set the intellectual pace for us. It's like whatever whatever young comedians are doing, especially like with the places that I work, a lot of kids come out there, bro. They mm-hmm. don't want to hear about, I don't do no sex jokes because nobody yeah. wants to hear about a 50 something year old man sex life. But you know what I'm saying? But a lot of dudes be doing it. Thank you. But a lot of yeah. dudes do it. But they don't realize that, okay, that's a lane that, that's a lot of traffic in that lane. And them yeah. cars are not a lot newer than you are. So why don't yeah. you get into a lane that, works best for you?
Yeah, that's solid advice. Solid advice. One of the things I'm learning in my scene is that with black comics, there can be like a separation because there's a certain black comics that'll do like not enough black rooms, but a lot of white rooms, and there's black comics that'll do only black rooms. And right. I think like the struggle is like I'm coming to a place where I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to do whatever jokes and they just resonate with whoever they resonate with. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. But some people strive to just like try to go down just like to the black community. And then like some people try to go like mainstream. Like what is like, I don't necessarily say like the best way, but what's like a way that you should focus on? Should you just like be yourself, or is there like a certain like avenue you should try to take?
There's two ways to answer this. One, nobody really decides which side they're gonna take. Everybody tests both sides, and the side that's most effective for them, that's what they do. Throughout my career, man, I've had comedians to be like, oh, you just scared of these urban rooms. But why am I going to go and do an urban room for free when I can go over here and make this money doing that or whatever? If I want to do a black room, whatever, I'd rather do it for free than to make less money to and lose a weekend. What I'm saying? However, if the urban room is your spot, that's what it is. Be the best that you can be. And I'll apply the same advice to any urban comic, a specific urban comic. Watch out for them traffic jams, because if you start doing the same topics and the same subject matter that everybody else does, then it's going to be hard for you to rise to the top, because there's always going to be better dick jokes than what you write. They're going to be better weed jokes than what you write. There's going to be better ass eating jokes than what you write. So the more organic you can be within those situations, I think is the best thing. I mean, I've never done like hood rooms, because I ain't go out. I don't have a reference point, which is, which is not a indictment on, my parents or whatever, but it's just that just the case. Like I didn't really have a real hardcore, hood reference point. And when you go in, people, man, they got that, people could tell. It's like, man, this nigga don't know what he's talking about. I'm just saying what everybody else saying at that point. And then we all wasting our time at that point.
No, I definitely understand that. How so, like, how did you get it? Like, my first introduction to you was Def Comedy Jam, and to me, you stood out not just because you were on there frequently, but I actually like love your style of comedy. So, how was that process of like getting on Def Comedy Jam, and also how was being on Def Comedy Jam a staple in the culture?
Most important thing I ever did in my whole life, in my whole career, if not my whole life, well, other than my family. At that time, man, Def Jam was the, not only was it like the cable was still relatively new. You feel me? It was like Def Jam was before the Sopranos. Like it was the first big cable television thing. It wasn't nothing like it before it came along. 'Cause like HBO was just like a like something you'd get, like, if you were, people were still doing network TV and whatever. But Def Jam not only put black comedy on the map, but Def Jam is quite as scale put HBO on the map, especially with the black consumer, because there wasn't a whole lot of black shows on back then. It was like when people would watch that, you would back in, what was that, 90, oh my God, early 90s, 92, 93. Man, you was, you do whatever you had to do to pay for the HBO bill so you can do Def Comedy. And then it was I, water cooler conversation. I don't know if you read this in my bio, but I used to be a cop. So when I was with the police department, this was before I started doing stand-up comedy and Def Jam was on, that's all we talk about. Hey man, you see that dude last night? You don't understand. I ain't scared of you motherfuckers. That shit. And then when I started doing stand-up, the dude Bob Sumner, who was the main booker, he saw me. He ain't really like what I did, which is cool, because like I told you, I ain't got that urban thickness like a lot of them dudes have. But then I worked with Joe Torre at a black room, and he saw me with the piano. He's like, hey man, I'm hosting next year and I'm gonna put you on. I was like, the dude already saw me and he don't want me. He was like, don't worry about it, I'm gonna put you on. So he put me on. Did it the first year. Man, I ain't never been so nervous in my whole life. I was a cop for 5 years, man. And I mean, I have been in gunfights, bro. Like hiding behind a car, burglary in progress. When you got to go into a house with alarm sounding, and you don't have your hearing available to you. Somebody can, whatever. I was more terrified doing Def Jam than anything in my life. And you know why, man? It wasn't because of, the show or whatever. It was because back then, dude, everybody was watching. And it's like, okay, either this gonna make my career or this gonna break my career. And thank God, man, what, 30 years later, 32 years later, no, it's 30 years later since my first appearance on there. No, I'm sorry. Well, I'm tripping. We did the 25th anniversary. Yeah, man, it's like 28 years since my first appearance on there. And relationships that I made from that show on my first appearance are still benefiting me to this day in 2023.
Wow. What made you bring the piano into your comedy act? Because you still do it now. What made you bring that into your comedy act?
Because that's what my daddy was a pastor, and I played the piano in my daddy's church, and my parents gave me music lessons and whatever. And I was in college, man. I had bands. I started off as a musician. I wanted to be a musician. And in high school, man, I got a lot of scholarships to go to, different colleges, but I elected to take the partial scholarship to the University of Houston, so I could stay home and play for my parents' church. But when I started doing comedy, man, I was it was all music. That's all it was, because that's all I knew. And so when I was opening, I never played the piano. When I started featuring, never played the piano. But then, bills started stacking up, and people would tell me, "Hey, if you want a headline, you got to pull that piano out." So I pulled the piano. I started closing shows with it. They started building kind of reputation for myself. Did my first TV show, did another little TV show, and then Def Jam. It just set it off, man. I mean, that 3 years, I bought my wife her first our first home. I bought a brand new Mercedes-Benz, almost cash. It was bananas. It wasn't, like, millions and millions of dollars. But dude, when you have that kind of money on the books as a young comedian, it's overwhelming. Because, just to think that, you're paying these bills off of sentences is crazy.
Yeah, I never really grasped that concept till you just said it.
Yeah, but it is, bro. You earn a living off of sentences. That's why people, that's what make hecklers, man. That's what make people like want to yell out stuff in your show, because a lot of people, they envy somebody who can monetize a sense of humor. Like, everybody got a sense of humor, but if you can monetize it, imagine if somebody could make money off of just smelling stuff. You know what I'm saying? And you actually paid them a service for them being able to smell stuff. You're like, man, I can smell some stuff. I'm envious of them because I can't smell like they can smell, and they're making all this money off of this. You feel me? So that's how stand up is. People gonna be upset with you, like people that you know. And don't let anybody tell you this, Ty, when people be like, because this is a microaggression towards comedians. They go, "Oh, well, people tell me that I should be a comedian. I'm funny. People tell me I should be a comedian all the time." You know what? You tell them from me. You tell them that everybody tells everybody that. Ain't nobody ain't never heard. Everybody is told. Your mother, you heard it. Your grandmother's heard it. Girl, you should be a comedian. Everybody in this world has heard they should be a comedian. But there's only a few of us who decide to put our reputations on the line, who decide to put our intellect up front, our ability to solve these hard math problems, to challenge ourselves, to say, "Hey, man, I'm gonna challenge myself to stand in front of you and say, for this amount of time that I am on this stage, that I am the funniest person in here."
Yeah, man. No, for real. For real. It's a, I heard that a lot of black comics were not getting booked before Def Comedy Jam, and then afterwards it just took off. Is that true?
Oh my God, it's so true. I mean, contemporary comedy has survived on the backs of black comedy. I'll tell you again, man, because, dude, I'll be honest, man, I've made a living off the curiosity of white people. They want me to come. They just want to be curious about the culture, and curious about this, and curious about whatever. There were two people that got work. The people that really appeal to the urban audiences, because then the urban audiences would come out and see them, and they'd sell and whatever. Or the people that were completely on the other side. I mean, not really completely on the other side, but still maintain our blackness. This is where I was. We still maintain our blackness, but we still told stories. But it was a position from a position of power instead of a position of weakness. Like, I never did do jokes about bad credit and crack and all that. Anytime I bring up black people in my set, it's always going to be because of something positive. I don't care what it is. I might tell a funny story where something ironically funny happens, where somebody is the victim in that story, but it's never going to be me putting down black people as a unit. And man, motherfuckers will love me, because I can, if a black people come to the show, they entertain. So it's not like I'm gonna be there and I'm so corny that black people are not gonna enjoy me. They're gonna enjoy me too, but it's just like, I'm not on chocolate sundae, because I don't do that. I don't, you know what? I do that, but that's a lane with a lot of traffic in it, whereas I just be another car in that traffic. But where over here, I broke out of the traffic, and I'm on my way to wherever I'm going now. So yeah, man, I think that it helped and it hurt. It helped because of reasons I explained. But then it hurt because it made these white people comfortable having these conversations about our dirty laundry. And some people would come to expect us every time they would see us, they want us to talk about this shit and about our cockroaches and all that kind of stuff. Oh my God, they laugh and laugh, and you talk about your cockroaches and how you ain't got no daddy and how, how broke you are and how you ain't got no credit. Oh man, but as soon as you talk about, about a positive credit score or where you went to college or stories about college or like doing clever quips on their society and stuff about them or talking shit about them, then it all, it changed. But Def Jam just brought all that to the surface and then gave the American comedy public, it said to them, you decide, what do you want to do? And it's taken them from that time to this time to decide, hey man, we like this better. Because if you think about it, like how many like white comics have really blown up in the last 20 years and versus how many black comics have really blown up in the last 20 years. And it's not even close. Not even close. You know what I'm
Who is
saying?
your
But yeah, because they come to see us, Ty. They want to see us, dude. And like, and that's why I tend to tell young comedians, it's cool that if you want to be a celebrity, it's great. If you want to be a celebrity and your idea of a successful career is movies and TV, but don't shit on this middle market because we need you. We need thoughtful people like even my little short conversation here with you, I sense that you are. We need those thoughtful people. I'm not saying that you got to be whitewashed and talk about, whole bunch of, mainstream shit, but you can just be yourself and style it in a different in a way that they don't expect. Just be blindsiding these motherfuckers, man. And you know what I mean? And they'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe he's that smart, but that urban. I can't believe that this came out of that vernacular. Oh, it's art, man. I'm telling you, dude. It's like, I'm not a big hip hop fan, but I love jazz. And that's that vibe is what I enjoy, what I take with me. And I love to see like, our young black creatives getting out there and just trying different stuff.
That's what I like to do. I like to try stuff that was gonna make you think. And I think I got that because my first trip to LA, I seen this comic tell a joke about dangerous, and I was like, I've never heard somebody tell a joke about dangerous. And I was like, and I can resonate because I have a lot of dangerous, like no matter what I do. And I was like, I've never heard this back at home. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna try to do that, like just talk about like the oddest things, and plus that's what I do anyways. But I was like, just talk about the oddest things because ain't nobody else doing that. So I was like, that's what I'm gonna do.
Here's something else to consider. The ironies like within the culture versus I haven't finished this joke, but imagine the irony of like say a country black dude going up to a bar and him ordering a Johnny Walker Black Straight. Listen to me. Johnny Walker Black Straight. And then some white people laughing at him while they are ordering a Jack Daniel Straight. You see what I'm saying? Like they fucking with the way he says it. However, he drinking Johnny Walker Black, which costs 20 times. You see what I'm saying? That Jack Daniels. You see, and I think that's, and I hate to put too much responsibility on you, but I think that's the message that you carry back to your community, to your young black comedy community. Talk about, whatever the dandruff is or whatever you feel is the most obscure, you work the hardest on that. That easy stuff gonna be there. Because the easy stuff, that's in the traffic. Everybody doing the easy stuff. Whatever it is, whatever, comedians in bed or what, I never heard of that shit. They almost hung this motherfucker up, and I was, this is porn shit. What are we doing? Yeah, man. But no, dude. I mean, you have the capability, and I think that everybody, man, we all have the mental capability to be able to distinguish ourselves, from our peers if we really try. But the easy route is to talk about what everybody else is talking about. If you see somebody doing something on ass eating, And you go, that's funny. I'm gonna write something on ass eating. That motherfucker already ahead of you. You're already ahead of you, bro.
Yeah. Who would you, a dying question I've been asking, who would you pick? Let's say you got a host, and let's say you got two comics and then a headliner. Who would you pick on like your all-time favorite Def Comedy Jam lineup? Who would you pick?
Oh, a host. Oh, wow. You know what, man? My favorite host was Ricky Harris.
Okay. Yeah, I like Ricky, yeah.
Great friend, super incredible personality. And I love Joe. Joe made my career. Yeah. Love Martin. He put it on the map. But Ricky, man, was just so expressive and such a great dude, man. He'd probably be my favorite host. And you asked me what I'd want to see? Mm-hmm. My headliner would be Mike Epps.
Okay.
Before Mike, it would be Cat Williams. And the first opener would be somebody you ain't heard of. Oh, my first opener would be what's her name? Angela Means.
Angela Means. Hold on, I'm about to look. Cause I'm almost done with the whole series. Means. Oh, they just got older pictures. I don't see nothing young. Hold on. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I remember her set. Yeah, and I didn't even know she did comedy. So then when I looked up on Friday, I was like, dang, like that's why I love Def Comedy Jam, because I didn't know half the people that are actresses and actors now did comedy. I had no idea. Like Why Did I Get Married, Tasha?
Right.
No idea. So yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I love Epps, man. Epps is like is my favorite comedian to watch. Like when people ask me about my favorite comedian, it's always different categories.
Yeah.
Like I have a comedian that, you know, that made me want to do comedy, mm-hmm. who's Dennis Miller. Black and White Album. Incredible. Incredible. Super smart, like really communicative, like really abstract concepts. I was like, man, if I can be a comedian like this, is that who I want to be? Dennis Miller. The person who I most admired was Eddie Murphy. And I know, like, a lot of these lists, man, that Richard Pryor isn't on, but because I never did drugs. And I always feel like when stuff is drug-induced, then that's a bit of a shortcut. So, and not like I don't love the hell out of Pryor, but it's just like when it comes to my people, it's typically people. Now, you know, I know Mike smoked weed, but he's the one I enjoy the most. I enjoy watching Mike Epps more than I enjoy watching Richard Pryor.
Yeah,
but you know, like, and of course Dave, but you know, weed and whatever, but you know, Dave is Dave, and that's my goat.
I feel like a lot of people sleep on Mike Epps. I feel like he's I always describe him having the same type of style as a Deion Cole and Earthquake. They all three kind of do it differently, but if you really pay attention, they all kind of have that same and I love it so much. And I think I didn't really pay attention before the pandemic, maybe because I wasn't doing comedy before then, but I feel like Mike is like really like sneaky coming up behind the ranks. Those last two comedy specials on Netflix were like fantastic. Like they were like really, really.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Underrated but Never Faded was one of my favorite specials all time.
Yeah.
And there are two types of comedian, man. There's like gifted comedians. And there are talented comedians. Talented comedians, they can learn to be great. They have to teach themselves. They have to have got great material and whatever. I think I'm a talented comedian. You know, I write material. I do stuff. I'm not gifted. Mike Epps is a gifted comedian in that he has these innate tools. Like he got the great smile. He has the great mannerisms. He's got these characters within him that he didn't have to go to acting school to develop these, man. He just came out the womb with these. Bro, that's a gift, man. Mike Epps is like probably the most gifted talented. Him and Kat, probably the most gifted talented gifted artists out there because they have so many tools that they have all this physicality that they have, and they're just like, you can just tell that they were made to do this job. Whereas somebody like me, hell, I don't know, I could have been made to be a chemist. I just happened upon this, and I've been able to make a career out of it. But it's been a fun ride though.
Yeah. Real quick, do you think that comedy, because you play the piano, do you think that comedy and music are like, I feel like they're combined somehow, like they just intertwine so like easily, like, and some people who do comedy play music, do music too, like, do you feel like they're intertwined?
For me, like in a really, but even in a not so meta way, it's always been part of my stand-up, my creative process. Like when I write jokes to music. Sometimes I do something on as a stand-up comedy thing that don't work as well, and then I turn it into a song. Like my closer right now in clubs is a joke that I tried for years to mediocre, well, not years, but like almost a year to a mediocre response, and then I turned it into a song, and now it's my closer. But I do think that I think that people should compare them more in genres, because people try and say funny is funny. It's not true. It's like saying, if you don't like good classical music, then you don't like music, which isn't true. Like there are different types of comedy, and if you don't appreciate it, it don't mean it's bad. But people will admit to you, well, I don't like, ska, or, I don't like Baroque or whatever. But they want to put comedy in the same category. Well, I don't think he's funny. Well, it's like jazz. You're not meant to get this. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, whatever. It's like something classical. If you don't like classical, then it's probably going to bore you. Yeah. But that classical music, it might be Luciano Pavarotti. You're going, well, if you don't know him, I might not like him. I like, whatever, Peebo Bryson better, or, J. Cole or whatever. Well, it's two different things. Yeah. So I think categorically there should be more comparisons made between comedy and music. And before I go, I know we got to go in a minute. Let me say this, dude. I think that female comics right now mm-hmm. are kind of leading the way. In terms of like, people talk about the next generation. I think the next iteration of the big comedy movement is gonna be ushered in by women. I'll bet the next huge comedy star after Kevin Hart and whatever. And we might not hear about it for a year or a couple of years and whatever. But my guess is that it's gonna be a black woman, because bruh. I be watching stuff, man. These girls are so funny. Mm-hmm. I don't never see them nowhere though. Yeah. And that's the fault of the machine. It's not their fault. It's the institution. To them, I had a dude to tell me, I was like, well, you're putting no females on your show. It's like, hey man, because I don't want them problems. Well, who are you booking? So that if you put females on the show, you're gonna have some problems. The problem might not gotten be with the ladies, it's gotta be with them. So, I just want to say that just in case. Somebody's watching, because I always like to get in credit, man, because they coming. I watched Amanda Seales special a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I watched it for entertainment purposes, I was like, it's pretty good. But then when I watched it from a critical vantage point, just in terms of talent and tools and that black female vernacular. And because everybody want to be there. Come on, man. Everybody want to be black women. Don't care where you are, the music culture, whatever the dance is, it's all black women doing the thing. And I'm not shooting on white women either, because I think that white women are eons ahead of, white women comedians are far ahead of white male comedians right now, because one of my favorite white girl comedians is, I don't know if you know Taylor Tomlinson is.
Oh, she was, yes. I was like, yes, she's my favorite.
Dude, so good, man. Dude, Rosebud Baker, crazy. Yeah. So it's just like they coming. So, the roles might be reversed in 20 years where, dudes can't get on the show.
Yeah. That would be a beautiful thing, man. That would be a beautiful thing. Billy, as we start to wrap this up, any words of encouragement for any comedian listening to this right now?
Oh man, if you listen all the way to the end or whatever, then you're on your path to something positive, you know, because I just think that, you know, perseverance and organization, and I know stick-to-itiveness has been used a lot, but it's the truth, man. It's like the only way you're going to get it is to put that work in, because you might get them social media numbers up. But I know I got a high, I got a lot of friends who are comedians that got a whole bunch of fucking social media numbers up, and they still owe me money. Like, they're telling me you need to get your numbers up. Nah, bro. You know, you got your numbers up. You know what I'm saying? Where my phone is. You know what I'm saying? So I don't, man. It just, you know, I'm not somebody that's you gonna take a, you know, if you want to take advice from my route, which is discipline and writing and going on stage and working your craft and being as unique as you can and whatever, you know, if you're looking for that example of comedian, I am that example. Somebody who's made money for 3 decades in this business doing this thing, just trying to be as different from everybody else as I can. And if I'm not the one that you would care to listen to because your route is going to be a different route, if you want to be DC Young Fly, man, I ain't got no advice for that, because I don't know how to do that. That's just that's serendipity right there. You know, yeah. Love that dude. It's crazy. But, you know, how many times that's lightning in a bottle?
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you want to, you know, and there are not a lot of people who are CEOs of corporations without some kind of business degree. You know what I mean? Yeah. There are a few. It may be. But you got to get that. You got to get that degree, man. I think that degree comes in writing, creating, believing in yourself, and stand on that grind.
Billy, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
Oh man, shit! Because we on it.
There it is, man.
No, we should, dude. You're a great interviewer, man. I appreciate this, dude. I didn't know how this was gonna work. This is very random. I was like, you know what? I'm off. You know, shit, middle of the day. And turns out my day is like bananas right now. Like, I had nothing scheduled today. And now all of a sudden, I got to do all this stuff today. But, man, I'm really happy, dude. You're a great interviewer. I mean, you have a great future, and you got a cool voice. You know, I ain't a big fan of the title of this motherfucker. But, you know, if you could switch it up, then. I tell you what, when you change the title, invite me back on. And we'll do another one like this would never happen.
Billy, tell people where they can find you at, man.
Man, everything is at Billy D. Washington. So if you get a chance, Billy D. Washington, not Williams. So if you get a chance, hit me up.
Go ahead and do that, man. If you want to watch next week's episode, go ahead and subscribe to my YouTube channel at TYE Comedy, or you can follow us on IG at Comedians in Bed Podcast. Billy, once again, man, we appreciate you. We see you guys next week.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.